the 0-1. Curveball swung on and ripped into left field. Rajay Davis, take the grand tour. A two-run home run for Rajay Davis. And the Blue Jays lead it 8-1. Rajay Davis with his first of two home runs. And that made it 8-1, a 14-5 win for your Toronto Blue Jays as they open up interleague play against the New York Mets. Two homers for Davis, two homers for J.P. Arencibia. He has now gone deep in back-to-back-to-back games. And J.P. with a career-high 6 runs batted in tonight. And, of course, Yan Gomes. The story with his first major league home run. He also walked and scored, had a sacrifice fly in the Blue Jays' 4-run sixth inning. Ricky Romero gives up a run on 3 hits over 6 to improve to 5-1. And the game, well, doesn't end, but the bottom of the eighth, Rob Johnson comes out from behind the plate to pitch a 1-2-3 inning for the New York Mets. Their only 1-2-3 inning of the night as the Blue Jays win 14-5 over the Mets. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell and long distance 1-888-666-0590. Interleague play has long been an issue for the Blue Jays. Only 3 times since 1997 have the Blue Jays finished with a winning record in interleague play. But they nicely threw down tonight, and they're off to a terrific start. Want to get your thoughts on that? Want to get your thoughts on the power display by the Blue Jays tonight? 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. We'll start things off with Jerry in Stratford, listening on 1240 CJCS. Jerry, what did you think of the start to interleague play?
Well, I think it's a good start. I'm quite happy the way things turned out tonight, and I think we'll get this off to a positive note for you. I'd like to see Gomes be moved over to third or to first once Brett has done his suspension, and put Edwin back in the DH box. It seems like Edwin bats better when he's just DHing, and give Gomes a shot and see how he does. Because if he keeps producing the way he's doing in this, done the past 2 games, it could be very hard to get him out of the lineup. And the way Davis has played in the past week, I think he deserves a shot as well as more playing time. And the walks that the Jays pitchers have done, they got to slow that down if they want to continue winning. And they're doing great. The bats came around. Batiste is heating up. JP's heating up. Like, this is amazing the way those guys have turned it around so far in the past week. I'm quite happy with that.
So, Jerry, why would you rather have Gomes at first than Edwin?
Well, I think it's just, but the best place to get Gomes more playing time, if Lynn is still down in the minors, and give Eddie the chance to just DH and concentrate on hitting, because he seems to bat better when he's just DHing. Like, I'm not saying anything against his defense. He's done really well at first base. Mm-hmm. I'm quite happy with that. But to keep Gomes in the lineup, why not throw him at first since he's played first?
Yeah, I mean, it's not unreasonable by any means.
Mm-hmm.
I think that obviously you can't take him out of the lineup if he keeps doing this. It's going to be hard to send him down on Monday if he's hitting 600 or thereabouts. Though his batting average did go down 67 points tonight, and that may be an answer. I think they'd really like to have Encarnacion play a lot of first base in the absence of Adam Lind, especially because if Vladimir Guerrero is going to wind up coming up,
true,
then, right, Vladdy's got a DH, and Edwin's
got
to play first.
Then you got two right-handed DH, that's right.
And actually, this year, Edwin has hit better as a first baseman than he has as a DH. So,
okay.
And I don't think there's anything to any of that, though.
No, like, I have nothing against what Eddie's been doing. I think he's doing a great job this year. He's off to a great start, and if you know, they keep going the way they are, the batting order, the 3-4-5, the way JP said, if they keep those three together, it could be dangerous for opposing pitchers.
Well, it's been a lot of fun to watch. Thank you, Jerry.
Right.
Appreciate the call. And figuring out a way to keep Yan Gomes in the lineup once Brett Laurie comes back, I mean, it's a wonderful problem to have. Who expected him to come up and be this great right out of the chute? Now, obviously, it's not going to continue, but, boy, you should really ride it
as long as you can. Phil is in Paisley, Scotland. Phil, you're on the Blue Jays Talk. What do you think of this interleague start?
Well, it's a great start, Mike. But even though the schedule from here on in interleague is pretty tough, I think, for the Blue Jays this year. So the Phillies, Atlanta, and I mean, it's pretty much only the Dodgers, I think, that out of the list that you've got that you actually wouldn't want to play this year. So it's going to be tough. But it would be fantastic to see the Jays do well in interleague for once this year.
It really, but, you know, wouldn't it?
Great.
But it's just bad luck, isn't it? I mean, there's no real explanation for why they don't play well in interleague.
It's just been strange, but every year,
yeah,
you just fear it because they've just, as you said earlier on, you know, they're dropping two or three games each year just in interleague alone. And but is it? I mean, it's gone on for years now, so there's a definite pattern there. So it's strange. I can't explain it anyway.
Yeah, no, me neither. But they're off to a good start. No question about that.
Yeah, as for the previous caller, Yan Gomes has got to move to DH on Monday, presumably if he stays up on Monday once Brett Laurie comes back, because Edwin's just been fantastic at first base. His defense has been brilliant.
Well, Gomes can play defense at first as well. I mean, Edwin is probably a little bit better, and I know some people will roll their eyes at that. He's a very good first baseman. He doesn't have to worry about throwing the ball, and he's fine.
Well, I haven't seen him do anything wrong since,
yeah,
since he's been playing there this year. Just a couple of very quick questions, if that's okay, Mike. First one, they've been playing so well since the Brett Laurie ejection on Tuesday, I think it was. Do you think that somehow galvanized the team because they started hitting the ball extremely well? Loads of home runs in these last few days. Do you think it's maybe galvanized the team somehow?
You know, we talked about that after the ejection and after they came out and won the next game. I don't think that that's really possible in baseball. I don't think it's possible to win by trying harder. You know, it's obviously it's easier to play the game when you're having fun, but with baseball, you know, you don't have an opportunity to take the ball away or anything like that, or to win something by wanting it more than the next guy. And I think that in the overall, you're always up there trying to do your best. You're always up there trying to pick out a pitch to hit and drive it. And you know, feeling that you've been wronged somehow or feeling that you're coming together a little bit more, I don't see how that translates to performance in the batter's box.
Yeah.
You know, I see the mythology of it all, but
yeah.
I don't know in practice how that can actually happen.
In British sports over here, there's something called a siege mentality that teams sometimes get going for them once there's this perception of things going against them. It's a siege mentality.
Right, but those are games in which grit, if you will, and tenacity and desire make more of a difference.
Yeah,
soccer,
sure.
You know, you rugby. Can you can take the ball away from the other guy. Rugby, same thing, right?
Yeah.
Baseball,
there is
you
one
can't.
One more quick question I'd like to
real
ask
quick.
If that's okay.
Real
yeah,
quick.
The additional wild card, I know it's looking ahead a little bit,
uh-huh.
But I'm just wondering what your opinion is about how the additional wild card will affect the trade deadline, because in previous years, maybe 40% of the teams sort of approach the deadline feeling that they have a chance to reach the playoffs with maybe a good trade. But this year, of course, it might be nearer 60%. So I'm wondering if you think the price is going to be higher this year with more teams perhaps chasing the same players.
Yeah, I think it's likely. I do. I think it's far more likely this year than in previous years that it'll be a seller's market and that the very few teams who find themselves completely out of it in mid to late July are going to have multiple suitors, more than they've ever had before, and smart general managers will be able to drive the price up and get a really healthy return for their players. So, yeah, I think it will cost more to make a deal at the deadline, and you know, that's a good thing for the weaker teams. Thank you, Phil, for the call. I appreciate it. I got to move on. Always lovely to hear from our listeners overseas. Blue Jays pound the Mets 14-5 tonight to open interleague play. Let's check in with Mark in Toronto, listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Mark, what do you think Interleague holds for the Blue Jays now?
Well, I hope it holds a lot better this year than it has in previous years.
That would be nice.
Yeah, that would be nice, yeah, especially with the extra wild card spot this year. I mean, those extra wins would really help. So, I don't know. I had a couple of questions. What do you think the new dynamic is going to be in the outfield now? Do you think we're going to see less playing time for Colby, more for Raji? Is it going to be kind of a bit of a revolving door situation between Thames, Raji, Ben Francisco, and Colby? Is that how you see it playing out?
I kind of see Raji getting more playing time, but not necessarily in center field. I think it might be left field that he plays more often, and we may see Thames DHing, and that may be the ultimate resolution when Brett Laurie comes back, too. John Farrell has been raving about Raji Davis for a few days now, saying he has earned more playing time, and he certainly has, and he earned it again tonight with the two home runs. Not that Thames deserves to be benched or anything, although he may think otherwise after striking out against a catcher tonight, but that, you know, that's something that just happens. I think that's the likeliest thing. I think that the Blue Jays really, really want Colby Rasmus's defense out there, and that with Davis, Rasmus, and Bautista, that's a pretty good outfield defense. And that can only help some of the fly ball pitchers, though they really don't have that many of those anymore. I think the likeliest thing is that we see that alignment more often than not, with Eric Thames getting plenty of DH at-bats.
One other question. Kelly Johnson, I've been quite impressed with him. I mean, do you think the Jays will try to sign this guy if he continues to play the way he's played? Like, I mean, do you see them, you know, like trying to sign him before the end of the year, maybe like extending him or something like that? I know he's a free agent at the end of this year.
Yeah, I think they'll try, but it's totally up to him. You know, Kelly Johnson came back here because he didn't get an offer that he found acceptable out on the free agent market this offseason, partly because he was a type A free agent and a team would have had to have given up a first-round draft pick to sign him. But he came back to try to rebuild his value, and that's exactly what he's done in the early part of the season. So I don't know that there's going to be any sort of hometown discount for the Blue Jays. I think that if they want to make a competitive offer, something that's similar to what he'd get by going out in the free agent market, then they'll be able to lock him up. But, again, that's something that's totally up to Kelly Johnson.
I'm just wondering, I mean, do you think, like, let's forget about a hometown discount, because I don't think we should think about a hometown discount. I mean, do you think Anthopoulos, or is it just sort of too early to determine sort of the worth of what Kelly Johnson is? I mean, is it just too early in the season to sort of say?
No, I don't think so at all. Kelly Johnson's got a track record of being a very, very good offensive second baseman. And you know, that's why the Blue Jays traded for him, and that's why they were happy to give him six and change.
Now, when you say it's hardly for Kelly Johnson, I'm just wondering, do you think Anthopoulos will be trying in the course of the season here to get some talks going with him?
Sure.
To try to get him to sign to maybe a three-year extension or something?
Yes, I do. I do. The Blue Jays are very, very aggressive about that sort of thing, and I do think that they'll be talking to him, if they're not already talking to him, about sticking around for a few years. Thank you for the call. We are going to continue to take your calls all the way up to 11 o'clock Eastern Time on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet590.ca. I don't know if we're on the first channel yet with the MasterCard Memorial Cup game going on. But if you want to listen on the website, there is an alternative channel when you hit the link for audio, and that's what you have to hit to listen to us until the hockey game is over. The baseball game is over. 14-5, the Blue Jays beat the Mets, but lots of other baseball games are going on, and we'll fill you in on those as we continue. It's the Blue Jays Talk on the Blue Jays Radio Network. Welcome back to Rogers Center, where the Blue Jays, not literally, beat the pants off the New York Mets 14-5 tonight to open a three-game series. J.P. Arencibia, career-high 6 RBIs in a two-home-run game. Yan Gomes hits his first Major League home run. Raji Davis hits his first 2 of the season. And his second and third is a Blue Jay. And Ricky Romero goes 6 innings, allows a run on 3 hits, though he does walk 4. Picks up the win. And the Jays are 22-18. And we take a look around and see what else happened. Tonight in the major leagues, the Detroit Tigers beat the Pirates 6-0. Justin Verlander took a no-hitter into the ninth inning when, with one out, Josh Harrison hit a soft line single to center field to break it up. That was the only hit he would give up, and he struck out 12. He's 5-1, just like Ricky Romero. The Blue Jay, the Yankees, that is. Wow. The Yankees beat the Cincinnati Reds 4-0. Andy Pettitte, 8 shutout innings for his first win since he retired after the 2010 season. Tampa Bay lost 5-3 to the Atlanta Braves, while Baltimore beat Washington 2-1 in 11 innings. So the Orioles open up a 2-game lead on the Rays in the AL East and stay 4 up on the Jays and 4 up on the Yankees. The Red Sox falling 6-4 to the Philadelphia Phillies. Hunter Pence with his 10th home run of the year. The Phillies have won 6 in a row as Interleague gets going. Elsewhere, it was the Marlins over the Indians 3-2. Hanley Ramirez drives in the winner with a sacrifice fly. This afternoon, the White Sox beat the Cubs 3-2. Kerry Wood struck out Dion Viciato and then walked off the field and retired. It's Texas leading Houston 4-1 in the bottom of the seventh. The Diamondbacks and Royals are tied at 4 in the top of the eighth. Twins lead Milwaukee 6-3, bottom six. Seattle over Colorado 3-0 in the top of the seventh. Kevin Millwood took a no-hitter into the sixth inning of that game, and he gave up 2 hits in that inning. Series continues tomorrow afternoon. We're on at 12:30 Eastern time for a 107 first pitch. We do expect to have Alan Ashby back, which will be great. It'll be Brandon Morrow, 4-2, against former Blue Jay Miguel Batista, who is 1-1 with an ERA of 4.26, 41 years old. Again, 12:30 Eastern for a 107 first pitch with the Blue Jays gunning for a fourth straight win. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Blue Jays Radio Network. More of your calls coming up. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, sportsnet590.ca for Jerry Howarth, Alan Ashby, Tom Young, Derek Brandeo, Joseph Chile. I'm Mike Wilner. Good night.
We're set to go. Yan Gomes pounds one deep to left field on the first pitch. It's up. There goes his first major league home run. Yan Gomes, the first Brazilian ever to play Major League Baseball, is 3-for-4 in his career. And the Blue Jays lead the Mets 4-2-1. Wow.
Wow, indeed. That was a rocket that got out of here in a hurry to left field. And that was the Blue Jays' second home run of the night. They would add 3 more. One more for J.Pierre and Sebia to give him 2, and 2 for Rajay Davis in a 14-5 rout of the New York Mets as they begin interleague play. The Blue Jays staying a half game ahead of the New York Yankees for that second wild card in the American League. Although, again, it's only May 18th. We are about to reach the quarter pole of this season. The Blue Jays at 22-18 on pace for about 89 wins. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk, 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We go to John in Toronto. John, how you like this interleague so far?
It's good so far, but I'm worried about interleague. Toronto always struggles, but it's a good start. My question for you, I have 2 questions quick. Kobe Rogers, I've been hating on him a little bit. He hasn't hidden since last year. Last year he was struggling. He's struggling this year. And you, including a lot of fans, rave about his defense. What is so special about his defense that I'm not seeing? Like, can you compare him to somebody? Is he as good as Vernon Wells? Can you give me an idea? Because, like, I'm not seeing spectacular plays. I know.
I think you're letting your blind rage cloud your judgment.
Everyone's talking about how he has spectacular defense.
Yeah, because he has.
But is it really that spectacular?
Yes.
He really gets the ball that other center fielders can't get to. Who can we compare it to?
He's better. I think he's better than Vernon.
Really? I'm not trying to. I just say
No, I understand that, but
Vernon,
I think you need to
good,
keep.
Right?
You have to keep a little bit of him.
Best center fielder. I think he won a Gold Glove a couple times. But,
that doesn't mean anything. Vernon was a great defensive center fielder.
Yeah, he was. He was. I'm kind of. Yeah, you're right. I don't know. I'm just hating on his bat. I'd rather have Rajay Davis a little more in center field. I think he's more dangerous on offense. And my second question would be, do you see Brett Lowe anytime hitting the two or the one spot because of his speed and great hitting ability to get on base? Hasn't been hitting for power this year, so maybe putting him in the two spot later on this year, you think that would work out for Toronto? Toronto thinking about that?
No, I don't think they are. Brett Lowe hasn't really shown a great ability to get on base. I mean, he doesn't walk a lot.
No, he doesn't, yeah.
He hits for average, which is nice. But that, you know, there are ups and downs attached to that. He's only got a .325 on base percentage this year.
And I still think it's still better than Escobar's, though.
Well, but Escobar's off to a bad start. I mean, you gotta take a bit of a step back here, because I'm sure you talk about hating on Colby Rasmus, and it's very interesting that you would admit to hating, which is
I like it.
It's like refreshing.
I'm hating on I'm not hating on him in a bad way. I'm just saying,
well, there's
I'm
no such thing as good
hate. I don't think he's. Like, how long are we going to go with him hitting around 200? I don't see him coming along.
But you want Rajay Davis in
there. And he's young.
I would.
Toronto's giving him a long leash.
I would suggest to you, John, that at most points in time last season, you thought Rajay Davis couldn't hit at all. And probably going into this year, thought he was a terrible hitter because he hit 220 for the Jays last year. But now you want him in because you saw him hit two home runs tonight. And because he's
no, that's got nothing to do with it. I've been on Colby's case for a while now.
I understand that.
Yeah, I'm not just talking about Davis, but maybe get like I'm not saying we don't have another center fielder we can throw in there right now, but like let's say if we got Victorino or somebody, you know, like I'm not just Davis is pretty much our only option right now. I'm not trying to like come out bad towards that. I'm a complete hater on Rasmus. I'm just saying because a lot of people have been picking him up on defense. And how they say that they'll take his defense over his 200 batting average, they don't really care. I would want to see somebody maybe with a bit better hitting than he is giving us right now. I'm not trying to come off bad or anything.
Okay.
I'm just trying to say.
I appreciate it, John. Thank you for the call. I get what you mean. I find it hilarious that you would say three or four times I'm hating on Colby Rasmus right now, but then say I'm not trying to come off bad on Colby Rasmus and I'm not hating on him in a bad way. The flair for the language is beautiful. Ethan is in Curtis. Ethan, listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, what do you think of this interleague stuff?
It's interesting so far. I mean, 14 to win one, I can't be complaining. But anyways, you'll be glad to know that I don't have anything to say about Colby Rasmus tonight, but instead, I've been looking at some of the Jays' pitching prospects. Obviously, McGuire, Syndergaard, Sanchez, Daniel Norris. Let's just say, theoretically, maybe 5 years down the road, if you're Alex Anthopoulos, what's the plan? I mean, are you going to maybe trade some of those guys, maybe trade a few guys that are in the rotation right now? I mean, what's the overall plan?
The plan is that you'll be incredibly lucky if two of those guys make it. That's the plan.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's very easy to get very excited about guys who are in A-ball,
but they're in
A-ball, and they fail all the time, and they get hurt all the time. And, you know, out of all these guys, Syndergaard, Sanchez, Nicolino, McGuire and Jenkins, if one of them winds up being an above-average major league starter, then the Blue Jays are doing really, really well for themselves.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I just had one more question as well,
sure.
Not regarding the Jays, but actually Verlander and his one-hitter.
He's really good.
I only saw the hit from one angle, but it looked like Peralta really just sort of almost gave up on that ball.
Well, I think he knew it was over his head.
Okay, yeah, like I said, I only saw it from one angle, but... Yeah, I mean,
it was one of those
throw
your bat at the ball, the bottom of the strike zone, and hope something good happens. And he knocked it into center field. There was no chance for those middle infielders to make a play on that. Thank you for the call. It is the Blue Jays talk. And it was a 14-5 win for the Blue Jays over the New York Mets. 416-870-0590. *590 on the cell and long distance 1-888-666-0590. Great start to interleague play. The Blue Jays will head out to Atlanta June 8th and then come home for three with the Nationals and three with the Phillies, then go back out on the road to Milwaukee and Miami, and that's their interleague schedule for this season. So far, 1-0, which is a lot better than what the Blue Jays have done in the past. I don't know if it was last year. Was it last year or the year before? They got swept by Houston that weekend. I think it was last year, first weekend of interleague play. We will hear from skipper John Farrell. We'll hear from his thoughts about the game after George Russick's update, and we'll take more of your phone calls. Right now, let's head out to Peter in St. Catharines. Peter, you're on the Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Mike, how does a New York sweep sound to you?
Back-to-back would be swell, huh? But there's still two games to go.
Yep. Yeah, that would be lovely, wouldn't it?
It would.
Yes. I want to ask about a couple things. First, I want to ask about the progress on one Brett Cecil and Dustin McGowan, and where are they at? And is there a chance we see them in Blue Jay uniforms this season?
I wonder if the ship hasn't sailed on Brett Cecil. And I say that not being sure, but I believe right now the Blue Jays would rather have what Drew Hutchison and Kyle Drabek are giving them than what Brett Cecil was giving them. He's back. He had been injured, but he is back now with New Hampshire, and I think had a very good outing last time out. I seem to remember five shutout innings or something like that in his last outing. But I'll see what I can do to check on that. And as far as McGowan is concerned, he was supposed to start his throwing program yesterday, but he started throwing off flat ground a little bit earlier than that. So he's back out there. He's working his way back. But again, for him, you have to start spring training all over again. So don't expect to see Dustin McGowan around these parts until end of June,
right?
Early July, something like that.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
Is there a chance now that Brett Laurie and Bill Miller are going to get together and write a book?
No. No. Armando Galarraga and Jim Joyce did, it's true. There was a little bit more significance to that than to this. Appreciate the call, Peter. Thank you very much. Last time out for Brett Cecil, he did throw five innings of two-hit shutout, a walk, and four strikeouts at New Britain against the Rock Cats. So a nice outing for Brett Cecil, but in the overall 1-2 with an ERA over 5 and 31 base runners in 21 innings in Double A. George Russick wants to do an update, and who are we to deny that? We will take more of your phone calls, and we will hear from John Farrell when George is done. Blue Jays beat up on the New York Mets. It is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The 3-2 pitch, changeup, hit on the ground, the short throw, a diving Cedeno base hit. Johnson around third, heading home, the throw, the slide, he scores. Go to second, the slide, Bautista's in there. The Blue Jays 5, the Mets 1, a big two-out hit by Bautista.
Jose Bautista's only hit tonight, 1-for-3 with a walk, drove in that run, stole third on the next pitch as Edwin Encarnacion followed by flying out to the warning track in center field. Edwin, the only Blue Jay without a hit, but he did walk twice and score a run. Only Blue Jay starter, that is, without a hit, as John Farrell emptied a bit of his bench, half his bench in the seventh inning, giving Kelly Johnson and Jose Bautista the rest of the night off. Just a great win for the Blue Jays, a rout 14-5 over the New York Mets. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk, taking your calls right up till 11 o'clock. Here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and sportsnet590.ca. Lines are open at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Before we get to the next round of calls, though, let's listen in on the manager. Here's what John Farrell had to say about tonight's big win.
Just an outstanding offensive night tonight. JP, obviously, the two-run home run, or the two home runs on his part. Six RBIs in total. Rajay continues to have an outstanding impact on games over this recent stretch. And really what's been encouraging, I know we've talked about it before with him and just the two-hand finish with a swing. It just seems to keep him more balanced, a much more repeatable swing, but very good to see. Yan Gomes, outstanding couple plays defensively, very strong throwing arm from the third base position. And I really felt Ricky settled into a better rhythm today, better timing in his delivery. I'm sure he'd like to take away some of those walks, but still a very effective and overall, I think, clean six innings of work here tonight.
John, although Ricky gave up just the three hits, he did have the four walks, and he fell behind an awful lot of other guys. Is there still work to be done?
Well, he's not as consistent as he's shown in the past. But I would say compared to the last three starts out, there were better fastballs, better stuff overall, and yet there's still some room to improve on the overall consistency and execution of pitches. But I think he didn't fight himself nearly what he did his last time out in Minnesota. So this is a step back in the right direction. The work he did in between starts to work on his separation at his balance point is starting to show some consistency to it. So hopefully this is another step, like I said, in that direction.
John, obviously JP is rewarding your decision to move him up in the order. How much of these games, how much is it going to factor into your future decisions on the order once Brett comes back?
Well, once we get to Monday, we'll take a closer look at that. But he has done nothing short of everything we could have anticipated, regardless of whether it's been in the bottom third of the order or in the five spot. Fact is, we're getting very solid production out of that middle of the order, and really the second half of the lineup again tonight with Rajay's two home runs, Gomes again, and two other quality at-bats that he worked a walk and then a sacrifice fly. So he's more than handled himself, Jan has.
John, if everybody could have their swing changed or corrected, the batting coaches would be geniuses. But what made you change Rajay's approach at the plate? And were you surprised at the two home runs, his first multi-homer game of his career?
Well, I think that we've seen Rajay over the last year plus that you see the skills, the talent. He's explosive. We all know Rajay by the base running ability and the ability to cover a lot of ground in the outfield. But what we saw for the majority of last year, there was a swing that he would execute where he'd kind of come out of balance. He'd fall over the plate quite a bit. And when we discussed, keeping two hands on a bat, it's allowed him to stay more compact. His hand path to the swing is closer to his body, allowing his center balance to stay more under control. And he's covered pitches on both sides of the plate. And if you see him in batting practice, he's got as much power as many guys in our club. But now he's starting to put a swing on some balls to take advantage of that.
John, how's Crawford?
He had a spasm in his low back, something that he's dealt with before. When he was in Double A, he's day to day, but we'll reevaluate it tomorrow when he comes in to get a better read. We're not considering any DL situation right now. But when we visited the mound, he felt like he could continue. The extra pitch that he threw, he didn't feel any symptoms. But when he was covering or going to back up third base, you could tell in his run that it was guarded, and wanted to get him out right then.
John, last week in Oakland after you made the move for JP with Vizquel, you said the next day one of the things that you worried is that the player can sometimes interpret a move like that as a lack of faith in his ability to deliver in that situation. Given the way he's performed since, do you think there's an element of him trying to show you that he is a guy that can deliver in those situations on a consistent basis, that he's a guy to be trusted with in the big moments?
I'm sure he would be more accurate in the answering of that question. At the same time, it shouldn't be misconstrued that there's not confidence in JP. In that specific situation, we talked about it after the game that night and the next day. There was a matchup that I felt, we needed to manufacture a run. It by no means was a signal from me to him that there isn't confidence in him. There was a matchup at the moment that I felt like we could be better served with. Whether or not he's performing in spite of that move, if that's what you're alluding to, I can't say that.
There's John Farrell, Blue Jays manager. J.P. Arencibia has been on fire lately, no question about that. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet asking that last question. Arencibia, in his last three games, the two against the Yankees and the one tonight against the Mets, has four home runs. He missed the cycle by a triple. And he's got a total of seven hits in three games. It's kind of ridiculous. JP on fire right now, adjusting very nicely, thank you very much, to the fifth spot in the lineup. This is the Blue Jays Talk. I'm Mike Wilner, taking your calls until 11 o'clock here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Alan is in Toronto. Alan, what do you think of this interleague stuff so far?
Well, they're off on the right foot. They really started it out in grand fashion. And 1997, only three winning seasons. Don't ask me why, because I don't know. You know, you could talk to Jerry Howard or Alan Ashby or Buck Martinez or Pat Tabler or Jamie. I asked Brent Mullins just a couple of years ago, and he didn't have the answer. What about you?
I have no idea.
You're every bit as knowledgeable as these fine gentlemen that I mentioned. Do you have the answer? You know, there's just some things in baseball you just can't explain.
Well, there's just some things in the world that you can't explain. And I don't think this is a baseball thing. This is just an overall cosmic luck sort of a thing. It's really unexplainable. And it's over with.
It's all coincidental. That's all. Yeah. You know, there's a coincidence.
Right, but it's a coincidence that's happened year after year after year for 14 straight seasons. It's very strange.
I wanted to ask you about Rajah Davis's arm. It's certainly better than Shannon Stewart's or Mookie Wilson's.
He has a good arm. He doesn't have a great arm.
He gunned down Zobrist on Monday night, and the play was not even close.
No. I mean, he doesn't deserve to be in a conversation with Shannon Stewart and those guys. Not at all.
No. He's better than Frank Catalanato, too. Catalanato was far defensively, I think.
Yeah, I don't know why you're bringing up all these guys with bad arms. Rajah Davis doesn't have a bad arm. He's fine. Mm-hmm. He's not Jose Bautista by any means, but his arm's fine.
And Jose Bautista, he better get moving because he's already had 145 at-bats. Your average doesn't climb that high, does it? He certainly won't hit 300 or anywhere near it this year. He'd be lucky if he gets up to 230, 240 because your average doesn't climb that much with every hit. Later the season, though.
Oh, but we're not later in the season yet, Alan. And thanks for the call. We're not even close to saying Jose Bautista will be lucky to hit 230 this year. He'll be quite unlucky, I think, if he only hits 230. It'll be tough to hit 300, but not impossible. Aaron Hill, 1 year, hit 291, and at this point in the season, he was hitting about 170, 180, something like that. It can certainly happen. You just kind of normalize and things creep up. If Jose Bautista hits 280 for the rest of the season, he'll wind up hitting about 255, which is just a hair below his career batting average. But it's on base, of course. That's a much bigger deal for Bautista, and I expect that to end the season 360, 370, at least in that neighborhood. Let's go to the nation's capital. Craig, you're listening to the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What do you think of this interleague stuff?
Well, typically I haven't liked it. Like in past years, Jays haven't done very well.
Right.
But there's no reason that should continue.
Correct.
I mean, the National League just isn't as good. I mean, they have one less hitter on every team.
Yeah, so. And they never have been as good. It's pretty amazing that the Blue Jays have been so continually subpar at interleague play. It's got to turn around.
I mean, exactly. So, I mean, Jays are good, so good team should beat worst team more of the time, right?
Yep.
Anyway, I wanted to talk about the batting lineup.
Yep.
Just loved watching that first inning. Kelly Johnson, good on-base guy, works the walk. Unel takes one the other way.
Yep.
And then Bautista comes up, okay. You're looking for the three-run shot, but it doesn't happen. So you go, oh, Edwin, okay, he's got a good chance to do it. Doesn't happen. Aaron Seabee, oh, he's also got a good chance to do it. And boom, out of the park. I just love the lineup on base in front of big power. That's beautiful. Easy way to score runs.
Well, yeah, if it works like it did tonight, for sure. And you're right. It's on base and then power, power, power. And that's a great way to build the lineup. And it worked beautifully tonight. I thought that the Blue Jays were very, very close to an opportunity wasted. I thought that they might let John Neese off the hook there. But Aaron Seabee made sure they didn't do that, and they certainly didn't the rest of the night, for sure.
Yeah, John Neese rumors were swirling around him heading to Toronto, and I think we're all pretty glad that didn't happen.
Well, he was having a pretty good year before tonight.
No, I know. I'm just kidding. But
yeah.
One more quick thing, if I could.
Sure.
Came up on the Getting Blanked podcast, videocast, whatever you call it. I was watching that the other day, and they brought up a good point, I thought, when they said that, how can Farrell really justify, and the question was never asked of him, how can you justify hitting Adam Lind in the cleanup for the vast majority of the season, and then he's down to AAA, and now he's not even filling a spot on the roster? I mean, how can you really justify keeping him in that cleanup spot for that long? I don't know if there's a good answer to that.
Well, I think that the answer is that you keep him in there in hopes that you're going to get something out of him, and then, you know, you reach the point, and John Farrell told us 100 at-bats he wants to give to evaluate a player, and he doesn't want to rush to judgment on anybody. And he had 97 at-bats when he moved him down to the 8th spot, and then he hit him in the 8th spot for a week, and it didn't work out, and nothing was helping, and he was still in a real trough, and they needed a third baseman. I think more than anything else, the reason that Adam Lind went down on yesterday, was because the Blue Jays needed a third baseman for 4 games. And if Brett Laurie hadn't been suspended, then we might have seen Lind stick around for another week or two and see if they could get him straightened out in the 8th spot in the batting order, and then he would have gone down. But I think it was the combination of him continuing to struggle despite being dropped in the lineup, but more importantly, the fact that they needed a third baseman that made that move happen when it did. Thanks, Craig. Appreciate it. I'm sure the guys on that podcast appreciate it, too. And by the way, there's a Blue Jays This Week podcast, too, that you should be listening to. You can find it on iTunes and on Sportsnet590.ca, and a new one with Ben Ennis and me went up just this evening. So it's brand spanking new for you right there. Jeff is in North York. You're on the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. How do you like this interleague stuff?
I'm liking the interleague stuff so far this year. 1-0, we can't complain.
Right.
We're going to have a winning record this year against the National League. Don't worry about it.
It's a tough schedule. They're playing some tough teams.
Yeah, I think we got the team, though. I think we can do it.
Alrighty.
But just a real quick question for you, Mike.
Yeah.
Our good old friend, Bob Davidson, he's a real friend of the Jays. I heard he got suspended for a game.
He did.
And I've never heard of an umpire getting suspended. Does that happen a lot? I thought they were protected by their union, or what did he do this time to get suspended? I mean, that clown the other night that missed the two strikes that Laurie had. I mean, it doesn't seem the umpires get reprimanded very often.
No, they don't. I'll tell you exactly what Major League Baseball said in its release. Davidson received the suspension for his repeated violations of the Office of the Commissioner's Standards for Situation Handling.
And what do you think that means in layman's terms?
That means he was being a jerk a little too often on the field.
Okay.
Especially, you know, when you look at the straw that broke the camel's back was the other night against the Phillies and the argument he got into with Charlie Manuel. Manuel was suspended for a game for that too, but Davidson was combative and belligerent and didn't let it go. I mean, he just kept going at him, and he used some pretty horrible language. And I think that Major League Baseball saw that and said, that's it. You know, you can't do that. The umpires are not there to egg people on and to try to make things worse. They're there to try to calm things down and keep the game in control, and they have to keep themselves in control too. And Bob Davidson failed to do that, as you know, we've seen many umpires do many times, but it's nice to see a little bit of discipline for an umpire, that's for sure. Thanks, Jeff. We got time for one more call tonight on the Blue Jays Talk. It's going to be Byron in Toronto. You're the last one. Make it good.
You know what, Mike? I love interleague play. Three of the most memorable games at the Rogers Center I've seen were watching Barry Bonds in batting practice just put on it was like watching the home run derby. I saw Roy Halladay come back his first game, and it was amazing. And then one of the most emotional times was when Joey Votto came back after his bout with depression, and they were very memorable. And tonight was different. In Toronto, we always feel sorry for ourselves, but imagine what it's like being a Mets fan in the same town as the Yankees. So tonight I was sitting in the section with some Mets fans, and then in the sixth inning, a guy named Jordani Valdespano, he came in to sub for David Wright, and they got this Mets fan behind me goes, "Oh my God!" He goes, "They have this guy in as a defensive replacement." He goes, "He's horrible. Just don't hit it to him, and he's great." Sure enough, Escobar hits it to him, and it goes off his glove, and the scorekeeper charges him with an error, and then he turned around, and then he gave it a hit. But it had to be one of the funniest things I'd ever seen.
Thank you, Byron. I appreciate it. We're right up against the clock, so we got to go. That's a great story. But it wasn't Valdespin didn't come in for defense. I'm sure they knew that with a score 14-1. The Blue Jays will try to do it again tomorrow. We're on at 12:30 for the pregame, 107 first pitch. Join us then. Thanks to Tom Young, Derek Brandeo, Joe Sicilia, and all of you for listening.